Hello, good afternoon. My name is Christina. I'm compulsive overeater. CEA Howe, State of Anonymity. There may be some here who are not familiar with our tradition of personal anonymity at a public level. Tradition 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and other public media of communication. Thus, we respectfully ask that CEA Howe speakers and members not be photographed, videotaped, or identified by full name on audio recordings, or in published or broadcast reports or meetings, including those on the internet. The assurance of anonymity is essential in our effort to help other compulsive eaters who may wish to share our recovery program with us. And our tradition of anonymity reminds us that CEA Howe principles come before personalities. A further note about anonymity. Out of respect for others, please do not take photographs during any of the evening events at the global convention. Also be considerate with taking photographs around the convention venues. Take care that you do not capture images of CEA Howe members, family members, and friends who did not give permission and may not wish to appear in your picture. Please do not post recognizable photos of identifiable CEA Howe members on websites accessible to the public, including unrestricted pages on social network sites. We thank you for your cooperation and observance to our tradition of anonymity. Just a reminder that our workshop is being recorded. Once the workshop is recorded and reviewed by the CEA Howe WSO board or its delegates, it will be added to the CEA Howe website, where it will become part of the public domain. So if you want to come up and use the microphone to ask a question, we ask that you please sign this release waiver up here on the table before you speak. Thank you.
Great. Okay. Welcome to the workshop. My name is Sheila. I'm a compulsive eater. I am very, very grateful to be here. And thank you, Christine. Thank you for being here and helping out. I appreciate it. And I was just thinking about you this morning, so it's really special to come in and see your beautiful, smiling face. So thank you, thank you. And I'm really glad that you're all here. And this is very exciting. These are the big ticket items in program, really. It doesn't get any bigger than this in terms of love and forgiveness. And when you have embodied the love and forgiveness that's possible through working steps 4, giving it away in step 5, obviously, but steps 4 and 8 and 9, service will be a natural outgrowth of that. And as I always say, the same two problems that I had when I came in with are the same problems that I wrestle with to a much lesser extent today. I do not love easily, and I do not forgive easily. Those are my issues. So even when I came in, and my top weight is 200 pounds, and I couldn't stop eating the things that we don't eat anymore, that was never my problem. It would be great if being overweight had been my problem. But we know that's not our problem, and thank gosh that CEA Howe brings that home to us so beautifully. I mean, the further I go along in this program, the more I fall in love with it. But that's what maintenance is all about, right? We wouldn't have a maintenance component to the program if my problem had been being overweight. There wouldn't be a maintenance issue, right? Because once you got to goal weight, I'd leave. And people do that all the time. I did it all the time. I was a chronic slipper for a dozen years before it came together for me here. So people do it all the time. And oftentimes what happens is people put the weight back on and then they run back to Howe thinking, oh my gosh, the problem is back. The problem never left. The problem never left. That's why they left program and put the weight back on. The weight is not your problem, just so you know. Get very, very clear about that. If you get nothing else from this, get that. Weight is not your issue. Because I'll give you a little secret. I'm not the only one who struggles with love and forgiveness. I'm not. That's why we have a 10th step. I saw very clearly just when I was driving here how I still struggle with love and forgiveness. and I was about a block from the hotel. Somebody cut me off. Somebody cut me off, and she's part of the How event. I know. Thank gosh I have enough tools that I don't gesture. I haven't gestured in my car in years, right? I haven't, thank goodness. And what I say to people is, if you haven't worked that one out, don't put a 12-step bumper sticker on your car, right? Don't drive around with bumper stickers if you're somebody who still gets angry and, you know, makes gestures or has, does that kind of stuff in your car. Don't do it. Don't carry that message. But she cut me off. And I could tell, I kind of figured, just, I don't know how I knew, but I thought, wow, I bet she's part of the CEA How event. So she cut me off. And then there was one parking space right on the street. She took the space. And not only did she take the space, but she had to turn around and obstruct me from being able to move on, right, while she was trying to maneuver her car into the space. Okay? So let's now back this all back up. Because you see how I've just given you a story, and we're going to talk about that. And I see nodding heads, and you're laughing, and you're smiling. And you know why? Because you're all on my side. Because I just told you a story. That's why when we talk about the fourth step as it's outlined in the big book, you surrender the story. There is no storytelling when you're doing a big book inventory, when you're doing that first part of it, the resentment, or when you're doing the sexual part, and quite frankly, when you're doing the second part, when you're doing the list of fears. There's no story. The reason you want to abandon the story is because story is how I get allies. Story is how I get to be right. And if I'm right, I never have to look at my behavior. Because let's just back this up again, right? So I was approaching a corner. I was making a left turn. I had the right of way. But she decided, making a legal right turn, that she was going to dart ahead. There's nothing inappropriate about that. I've done that countless times. We'll talk about that when we get to step 8 and 9, how you can get free. We're going to talk about all this stuff. But it was just so interesting for me to see it 5 minutes before I'm walking in, right? How this stuff works. And why I need to do this stuff and live by this. Because there was nothing inappropriate about the turn she made. It wasn't illegal. It was a little cheeky, but I do cheeky moves, right? And then she saw a parking space ahead of me because she'd gotten ahead of me. Well, wouldn't it have been silly for her to have made the cheeky move and then not taken the parking space? That's why she did it. Maybe she, like me, was trying to rush to get in here. Okay, so there was nothing inappropriate there. And the parking space was on the other side of the street. She needed to turn around. And it is difficult to turn around a vehicle on a street when there's cars parked on the one side. Of course, that's going to take some maneuvering time. See, she didn't do anything wrong. She didn't do anything wrong. But where she came in collision is my needs. Don't you understand? I got needs here, right? That was the problem. That was always the problem. That was the problem with every resentment that ended up on my four-step. And if I hadn't forgiven the big ticket items in terms of stuff on my four-step, and we'll talk about that. I'm going to let you in on my life. But if I hadn't done those big ones, I never would have gotten to the point where I get to come to an event and I get to see within seconds how I get angry, how I don't forgive, how I'm judging, how I'm critiquing, how I've got opinions. And that will hamper me. That's my problem. Now, if I keep that up, if I kept that story going, and I do that long enough, eventually I will get back into the food. And I know because I did it for years. I was a chronic slipper for a dozen years. It doesn't start with the food. If you get hit by a train, it's not the caboose that killed you. It was the engine, right? And it's the thinking. It's the problem thinking. And the thinking all revolves around what the big book says is our core issue, selfishness and self-centeredness. See, I was selfish. I wanted to go first. I had the right of way. How dare you? Anytime I've got "how dare you" flying through my head, we're in trouble, right? How dare you? She didn't do anything wrong. And thank gosh, I have this process through doing these steps over and over and over again. And I love the big book. I'm a big book thumper. And I'm actually doing the How series of questions that have me in the big book. It's really cool. It's wonderful. We have a great a great series of questions that deal just specifically with the big book. Really, really cool stuff. But thank gosh, I have really internalized this stuff so that when these things come up, I don't have to get tripped up. And I get to release her with love and release myself with love and just move on, right? So what we're looking at are steps 4, 8, and 9. So step 4 starts on page 63. And I just want to take you to a paragraph at the top of page 63, which is planting the third step, because that's what you want to have planted before you move on to the fourth step. And this is my favorite paragraph in the big book, bar none. Top of page 63, I'm going to read it to you. Well, actually, would somebody like to come up and read it? You just need to make sure you've signed the waiver. Come on up, sweet Elisa. She's going to go ahead and sign the waiver. And so we're looking at a paragraph. So if you have your book with you, it's a paragraph at the top of page 63. If not, write it down, because you want to check this out. Countless times I have sponsees who call me rattled about something, and I say, well, I'll tell you what, just let's get to this paragraph, and let's read this together, and then let's talk about the problem.
Elisa, recovering compulsive overeater. Hi. With issues of speed talking, so this would be fun. When we sincerely took a position, I'm good. Oh, sure, thank you. That's great. When we sincerely took a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had an employer. Being all-powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept him close and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, we enjoyed peace of mind, and we discovered we could face life successfully as we became conscious of his presence. We began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or hereafter. We were reborn.
Great. And the thing that it says when we took such a position, and the antecedent in the paragraph before, because that such is very important. Actually, all these words are very important. This book is very well written, and it was brilliantly edited. But that such a position in the paragraph before, it's basically saying, God's in charge and you're not. That's what I needed to get down. I needed to get very clear about that. And as a chronic slipper, I can talk about all the big things all I want. The career, the husband, the, you know, the student loans, the Oscar I want to win, whatever it is. I can talk about all that nonsense all the time and turn it all over. But I never wanted to turn over my food. I never wanted to take a third step with my food. Right? And because I was a slipper, it was very, very clear and brought home to me by loving sponsors, patient loving sponsors in CEA Howe over the years, that I wasn't taking a third step. That is, when I wanted to eat, I would eat. That is self-will, right? So at any rate, just wanted to point out that paragraph because that's what we want to get clear about and the promises that it gives us at the end of that paragraph. Because don't kid yourself, when people talk about ninth step promises, there are promises on every single page of this book. I mean, I've joked about it in other situations, right? Where you could play a game, right? You could play a game with friends, a 12-step game, and just, you know, turn to a page and find a promise. Whoever finds the promise the quickest. There are promises on every page, but it says we will begin to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. So if I will let God be in charge, take a third step, I'll be free of fear in the present, about the future, and in life after life, or however that shows up for you, or however you language that, right? That's a pretty powerful promise, okay? And then you want to stay clear about that, because that's that exciting thing, and then we have the third step prayer here, which is very cool. But then we get to the bottom. It says, next we launched out on a vigorous course of action. And this is where we get going in the fourth step. And there are three parts to a big book four step, three distinct parts. There's the resentment part, there's the fear component, and then there's the sex part of the inventory. Raise your hand if you've never done an inventory. You know, we have our wonderful inventory in Howe, but raise your hand if you've never done an inventory through the big book. Okay, so we got a lot of people in the room. Okay, so this is cool. This is good to take a look at this. So again, three parts of a big book inventory. And the inherent value of a big book inventory, in contrast to our wonderful inventory that we have in CEA Howe, which I've done four times, love that, and you know, can't wait until I have a sponsor direct me to do it again, right? I'm a writer. I love writing, so I just love it. the thing that's different about a big book inventory is you are getting rid of that story. It is getting down to causes and conditions to figure out what is fueling this desire to hurt myself. So the first part is the resentment part. And that starts on page 63. And we always hear talk about the four columns that are occurring in that inventory. And it's outlined on page 65. Now, there's only three columns there. But where you get the fourth column is on page 67. So an inventory goes, a big book inventory goes in the four columns. It's I resent, the cause, and how it affects me. And then the fourth column is what is my part? That's really important to pay attention to that fourth column. And remember, resentment is just a $2 word for I don't forgive you. That's all a resentment is. That's all it means. It's I don't forgive you. So I've had, it doesn't happen often, but once in a while I have a sponsee say, well, what do you mean by resentment? You know, because it says in the book, that's the big problem in our life is resentment. It's not forgiving. Remember what we're doing in the workshop? We're looking at love and forgiveness. That's what a resentment is. I don't forgive you. So you write down four columns, and again, you can look at it on page 65 and see, but it's I resent, and they talk about people, places, principles, institutions, right? I had a university that was on my first four-step because I hadn't been accepted for graduate school at this particular university. And shame on them, in my mind, right? So they were on my four-step. So it's the first column is who do you resent? Why? What's the cause? And again, there's not a lot of room. If you look at this on page 65, there's not a lot of story there. There isn't a lot of room for story. Remember, with story, I'm trying to get people on my team so I can stay a victim. So I don't have to look at my stuff. I'd rather look at her stuff. I'd rather look at the stuff of the person who's turning in front of me instead of looking at my stuff and saying, gosh, there I am, selfish. And if I'm running late, that's my problem. Here's a little thing I noticed. When I'm not late, you're all driving fine. Right? And what's funny is I wasn't even late. But I also realize I'm kind of an anxious person. I put the food down and I got very clear about what an anxious person I am. My motor runs pretty fast. So I need to not get a place 15 minutes early. I need to get somewhere a half an hour early, apparently, because I was going to be 15 minutes early and I was still rattled about someone turning in front of me a block from the place. So my job is to take care of myself because I can't control you. And it's a pursuit that's going to cause me a lot of damage. Before it ever causes you any damage, it's going to cause me damage, right? So I resent. What's the cause? What is my part? What is my part? And what we have listed here, it talks about self-esteem, security, personal relationships, pride. There's a number of things. We're looking at how am I getting affected in this place in the world where I'm not forgiving? And then on page 67, right, this is where it gives me the fourth column. Referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely looked for our own mistakes. Here it is. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? And for me, what I tell my sponsees is, to me, selfish and self-seeking are close enough that we just put it in selfish. So I have them look on the fourth column for those three things. Where were you selfish, dishonest, and frightened? Okay? So now, I'm going to tell you a secret. Here was my biggest item on my four-step, and that was that I was molested when I was a kid by a family friend. And so, quite obviously, he ended up on my first four-step. Let's just call him Joe. So, I resent Joe. The cause molested me, affected me in lots of different areas. Of course, it affected my self-esteem. Of course, it affected my sex relations, right? Of course, it affected me in terms of security. So all those boxes got checked. And then I got to the fourth column, right? And I was confused there. Because I said to my sponsor, well, I don't understand where I would have had any part in this. How is there a fourth column? How is that possible? Because I wasn't responsible, was I? And she said, of course you weren't responsible. You had zero responsibility. And my guess is I'm not the only one in the room. Right? There are statistics out there. I'm not going to quote them because I haven't seen anything put in front of me. I'm an academic at heart, and I haven't seen a credible source with it cited in front of me. But I've heard some pretty big numbers. People with eating disorders. How many of us have had sexual trauma, right? So she said, of course you weren't responsible. In no way were you responsible. He was 50. You were 10. It wasn't a fair fight. She said, but what is it directing us to look for? Because it doesn't say, oh, there's an exception. There's not an asterisk there with an exception at the bottom saying, oh, if you were molested. No, the fourth column, jump back into the victim thing. He did this to you. This is terrible. You're going to be affected for a lifetime. Nope, there's no asterisk. So I am directed to find out, where am I selfish, dishonest, and fearful in reference to not forgiving Joe? Okay? So it's easy to see where you're fearful, right, when that happens. So that was an easy one to get. Where was I selfish? Well, and this was in a loving conversation with my sponsor. This was before I even finished the four step and then was going to be doing a fifth step. And she said, and she did this in person. It was really important to be in person. And she said, do you understand that I know how horrible it is that this happened to you and that I'm really sorry that this happened to you? Do you get that I'm right here with you on this? And I did. I knew that she really heard me and she really felt compassion for me. And I said, I do. She said, so since you know that, I'd like to stretch this out a little bit and kind of point out to you that to continue to carry that woundedness, that banner in the world, is keeping you from being present in the world. I said, how do you know that? She said, tell me about the relationships you've had with men. I felt like I'd been sucker punched. Because every boyfriend I'd had up to that point, I was 24 or 25 years old when I did this first inventory. Every man in my life had paid the price for what that man had done to me 15 years before. I always say every ex-boyfriend would cross the street if he saw me coming, and hopefully he's not going for a gun. Right? Because I was angry. So I made a lot of people pay. And I got it, right? I saw how selfish that was. It was selfish for me to continue to not forgive Joe. Because I was 25, I had a lot of life ahead of me. There were a lot of men. There was a lot more damage to do, right? So I got the selfishness, and I said, okay, I get that. Now, where is it dishonest? She said, okay. So we know that resentment is about not forgiving. And I said, yeah. And she said, you don't forgive Joe because he's on your resentment list, right? And I said, no, I don't think I do forgive Joe. She said, okay. Have you done anything to anybody that you want to be forgiven for? I said, well, I've never molested anybody. She said, that's not what I asked. I asked if you've ever done anything to anybody that you want forgiveness for. I'd done plenty of things. I had keyed my sister's car about 2 years before, right, when I was drinking, a Corvette. Right? And so there were plenty of things that I wanted forgiveness for. So she said, do you think it might be dishonest that you don't forgive somebody in the world when you want forgiveness? I could see where that was dishonest. So there was an opening. Just in doing the four step, the first part of the four step, all of a sudden my heart got open. And I only started with the big one, so you get it, right? Because if I can do it on the big one, the other stuff was easy, right? But my heart opened because I saw in putting this down, keeping the story out of it, seeing where I'm affected, the price that I'm continuing to pay by not forgiving, that's what resentment is, and where am I selfish, dishonest, and fearful? My heart opened a little bit. So then you get to the second part. And that's listed on page, it starts at the bottom of 67. It talks about fear, and it says how fear causes more damage in our life than anything. And this is interesting in the big book on the fourth step, because you actually take the fifth step right when you're doing the fourth step, right? And that's cool. So you actually create a list of fears, No story, no attachment, no this came from here, whatever. Again, they're not interested in the story. You want to keep the story out of it. The story keeps me from my feelings. It keeps me from taking responsibility, and it keeps me from my feelings. So you just list your fears, and then it says, you read them, and then it says it in kind of an interesting way. It says, instead, they trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. Okay, I've done this myriad times because everything happened for me. It started in the Midwest where the philosophy is you keep going through the steps over and over and over again, right? So I've done this many times. I've never had a healing where, oh, the fears are gone, right? It's never gone like that. But I'll tell you what, they got lessened. And there are some fears I used to have in my life that I do not have anymore. And big, interesting things, right? I deal with a major health diagnosis that I got diagnosed and then undiagnosed. And, well, it's not that, but we know it's something else. And I deal with very, very significant chronic pain, really significant pain. And it's a non-issue for me 98% of the time. And when it's not, I make an outreach call. And I know who to call, right? I don't need anybody to talk me out of it. I don't need anybody to fix me. I certainly don't need anybody to tell me read the big book when I'm in pain and I'm crying on the phone. I don't even need them to talk. I just need them to listen while I cry on the phone, right? And that's a tool. I'm supposed to be making those calls on a daily basis anyway. So then I figure out who those people are, right? But it's amazing that most of my fears have gone. It just didn't happen instantaneously, like it kind of seems to indicate here. But that doesn't matter. Maybe you'll have one of those moments. You'll never know unless you do the work, so give it a whirl, right? So that's the second part of the inventory. And then the sex inventory part starts on page 68 and goes to the end of that chapter, which is 71. And it's the same kind of thing, right, where you're writing down who did you hurt, and you will always be on your sex inventory list. I tell all my sponsees that. You'll always be on your sex inventory list. Anybody that you had sex with, anybody who you might have been molested by, anybody who molested, if you molested anybody, because I've had sponsees who've done that as well, right? And so anything, or if there was just inappropriateness and it felt uncomfortable, or touches or fondlings or looks or glances, what, something, anything that has you off in reference to physical contact, that goes on your sex inventory. And in terms of the fourth column there, they add inconsiderate. So where is it fear-based, dishonest, selfish? But then they say, where is it inconsiderate? And I have a friend who's English, and he always says, bad form, bad form. So, you know, where was it bad form? So if somebody, you know, touched your bum and that really affected you when you used to work in wherever you worked in college or whatever, then that's you know, it was inconsiderate. Or if you touch somebody's bum, right, it's inconsiderate. So they add that. It's just kind of a cute little thing that gets added there. But that's what goes on in the four step, big book four step, resentment, fear, and sex inventory part. But again, I think where you might find the most freedom, at least for me, is in that resentment part. Because the reality is there were people who ended up on the sex part of the inventory who were also on the resentment part for me. Joe, the gentleman I referenced, quite obviously was, right? But the big deal is it's all about the forgiveness. And it starts with that fourth column in seeing my part and getting very, very clear that because resentment is about not forgiving, there is a price that I'm going to pay if I carry that resentment. That is, if I choose to not forgive in the world, I'm going to pay a price. And not getting abstinent is going to be the smallest price. That seems like the biggest one, right? Especially if, you know, I have friends who are 100-pounders. That's a big deal if you can't get abstinent and you're a 100-pounder. That's a very, very painful way to live. I have a girlfriend who's lost and gained 100 pounds 20 times, right? Very, very painful. So I can appreciate that. But I still stand by what I say. It's the least problematic price that you're paying. Everybody in my life gets affected by everything that I put in my mouth or what I don't. Everybody in my life is affected by it, yeah? So then you give it away in a fifth step. Now, the really cool thing when we get to steps 8 and 9. Okay? Because the big book says that, and it starts on page 76 for steps 8 and 9, and they kind of meld them together in terms of the writing communication. But it says on page 76 that we have a list of all persons we have harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. So that tells me right there, according to the big book, every name on my 4-step is on my 8-step list. Okay, remember how my little heart got opened a little bit when I did the 4-step, finding that 4th column? Now all of a sudden, are you kidding me? Joe's on my 8-step list? I owe an amends to Joe? What? So then my sponsor, we have another one of those wonderful conversations, and we have them in person, right? And if you're not, if you're a bridge person and your sponsor is on the bridge, you just have that loving, you know, you have that loving conversation. But what my sponsor brought home to me very, very clearly is, of course I didn't owe Joe an apology. Of course not. I was in no way responsible for the molestation. But I was certainly responsible for one very important thing, and that is that I hadn't forgiven him for years. I wasn't responsible to Joe, but I was responsible to a God of my understanding, and I was responsible to myself that I hadn't forgiven him. And remember, I referenced all those men in my life that I'd punished, including my father and my brothers, by the way, because I'd been molested. And quite frankly, I punished my mother too, because how come you didn't know about this? What was I doing driving around in this guy's Buick anyway? What was that about? Right? So my mommy got punished too. And I was certainly responsible for the fact on that 8-step became clear, since Joe's name was on the list, that I was responsible for not having forgiven him. So we don't get a lot of direction in the book how to do those 9-step amends, which is, as was pointed out to me, then you are dependent upon good sponsorship. And what my friend always says, not just good sponsorship, but a lineage of good sponsorship. Make sure your sponsor has a sponsor. The cool thing in CEA How is we've got that covered. I mean, that's just really covered here, which is so, it's actually one of the most valuable things I think about our program, is we have such an integrity about sponsorship. We really, really do. And the idea that we get people sponsoring after they've worked the 3rd step, that's just brilliant. It really is. It's a holy thing, you know? Start giving it away. But there's not a lot of direction in the book. And part of that was probably due to the fact that, Bill had some real issues. I mean, he was kind of a rascal in the world, right? He was certainly, I don't want to chat about that. Because, I'm a rascal. Look what I just did when somebody got bratty and turned in front of me, right? I mean, that baton gets passed around. But the point is, we had somebody who was very in touch with his humanity, who wrote the book and didn't come down with a lot of dogmatic declarations about, you need to do this, you need to do that, you need to do this. There's a lot of room and suppleness, and he suggests, you might want to do this in terms of amends and where to make them, and specifically around sexual peccadilloes and things like that. That tends to be where he's left the most leeway for himself and for us who are reading the book afterward. So again, you're dependent upon good sponsorship and a lineage of it, so that if your sponsor doesn't know what to do, your sponsor's going to ask her sponsor or his sponsor, right? So that I've given myself as great an opportunity as possible to not be involved at all in trying to solve this problem. Because I've never been able to solve my problems. Mm-mm. If I could, I never would have come here. I never would have worked so hard. Again, I was a slipper in this program for a dozen years. I never would have worked so hard to have a relationship with God, ever, if this had all come together for me. Never. Mm-mm. Mm-mm. And I worked really, really hard because I just couldn't surrender. I was too afraid to feel is what it is, right? That's what it is. Somebody doesn't, when they're not done with the food, it's not about the food, it's about the feelings. They're not ready to feel the feelings, right? But by the time I'd gotten to this point, I was ready to feel the feelings. And So the direction I got from my sponsor is, and Bill talks about this later when he's referencing the guy who hadn't done right by his wife and directs the man to write a letter. I just saw that just half an hour ago or 45 minutes ago when I was just kind of looking over some notes and stuff before I was going to be coming over here, which is one of the great things about program. You know, let me just make a little side note here. It doesn't matter how much time somebody has or how long they've been here. Well, actually, put that on a post-it note. We're going to come back to that. But I just love the idea, because I've been here a long time, and I've been in the mother program longer and doing the deal there, right, and working the steps over and over and over again. And I love it that I can wake up on a day and find something in the big book that it feels like I've never seen before. You know, I just love that. It keeps me very, very appropriately humble, and I love that I can come in a room and get blown away by a newcomer who's been here for hours, right? I mean, that's what's so cool about this for me. But I just saw that in the book, talking about, you know, this guy gets directed to write a letter to the wife that he owes some money and resources to, and the guy decides that he's willing to do it, that it's going to be scary because this ex-wife could send him to jail because he hasn't been keeping up with his alimony and things. But he realizes he'd rather take that risk than stand before his creator. And he also, I think what was foundationally underneath that, he didn't want to go out and drink again. He got it. He made the connection that if I don't do this, if I don't deal with this stuff, I'm going to return to the alcohol. So I think he got that, right? So it was the letter writing, because that was what my sponsor directed me to do. She said, we're going to write letters. You're going to write a letter to Joe. She said, and it's going to go like this, again, because we don't get specifics in the book, lineage of good sponsorship. And this was a great one. And she said three things in the letter. Dear Joe, and keep it simple. She said, keep it simple. Now this changed when I did letters to my mother and stuff, But she said, for this one, keep it simple. And she had me do simple versions of all the letters. But then I would expand on with family members and my mother and stuff. But it was, Dear Joe, first part, I forgive you for having molested me. Wow, that's pretty big right there, right? Boom, just write it down. And remember, 12-step programs are a behavioral approach that turns into a cognitive approach. But it doesn't start with cognition. It starts with behavior. It's a behavioral program that turns into a cognitive one. So you take the behavior, right? Act your way into right thinking, right? Taking a behavioral approach. So she said, even if you don't meet it, you write it. Because we're on the ninth step now. You've got the list. Now it's time to do the deal. So write it. And it actually wasn't hard for me to write that. But that was the first thing. So, Dear Joe, I forgive you for having molested me. Second thing, second sentence. Please forgive me for not having forgiven you for 15 years. Wow. All of a sudden, there was my part. So, see, it wasn't like I was just writing this down like, okay, I'm very nobly going to, Dear Joe, I forgive you for having molested me. It didn't stop there. And it goes on to the next part. Because I want to see my part. I want to see my part. That's my place of power. And I don't mean power. I mean it's my place of empowerment to see my part. So, Dear Joe, I forgive you for having molested me. Please forgive me for not having forgiven you for 15 years. So all of a sudden I get very appropriately right-sized. Right? Because I didn't forgive him for 15 years. And then the third thing, she said, write something nice about Joe. Because the problem is, when somebody's done something hurtful, right, we see them through like a periscope, and that's all they are anymore, right? That was all I saw. That wasn't all that Joe was. Joe was somebody's father. He was somebody's employer. He was somebody's employee, somebody's uncle, somebody's son, somebody's friend, somebody's bowling team member, right? My dad's. He bowled on my dad's team. But he was a whole host of things. And so she said, write something nice about Joe. And I remember one thing he always used to do. He used to bring me wheat pennies. Nobody under the age of 40 is going to know what wheat pennies are. But they used to be these pennies with wheat, you know, yes, on the back. And he would bring me those pennies, right? And I said, thank you very much for always bringing me those wheat pennies. You knew they meant a lot to me. And my sponsor said, sign the letter off as high as you can go. And there's nothing higher than love. And we know you're eventually going to end up there, because it's all going to come out in the wash at the end for all of us, right? So since it's a behavioral program, let's just sign off the letter, love, Sheila. So I did. So that was the letter. Dear Joe, I forgive you for having molested me. Please forgive me for not having forgiven you for 15 years. I remember you always used to bring me the wheat pennies, and I thank you for that. You know they meant a lot to me. Love, Sheila. That was it. And then she had me fold it up, get it in an envelope, address it to me, from me, mail it to me, and then put it in my God box when it returned to me. That was it. That was what happened. And I got to tell you. So, again, that was the big item. There were countless other items, countless other things, right? But those were the big things. That was the biggest thing. You cannot imagine how that changed my life. You just can't imagine. You know, we talk about the nine-step promises, but in no way, in my experience, and in my belief system, in my world, and I teach my sponsees this, the miracle doesn't happen. The promises don't show up because I've been a good girl and I got to the ninth step and did a ninth step. Mm-mm. No, a loving God was always present in my life, always. There was always a loving God there. I was the one who was in the way, right? My lack of forgiveness, my selfishness, my unkindness, right? I was the one who was in the way. So what happens is when you have moments like that over and over and over again, where I'm seeing my part, where I'm willing to take direction, loving direction from a sponsor, and do exactly what that book asks me to do, which is forgive and take a behavioral approach to forgiving. Do the work. Show up. My heart gets open and my eyes get open. And then all of a sudden those promises, which many of them were already there, they'd been in my life for a long time. I can just see them now, right? That's the miracle. It was my heart that was the problem. That's why I say it certainly wasn't weight and food, so we get that. And it was never you. It's never you. It wasn't the woman turning. She didn't do anything wrong. It wouldn't matter if she had done something wrong, if she'd really cut me off and there'd almost been an accident. It's still my problem, right? If I've got a problem with your behavior, you don't have the problem. That's why you did the behavior, right? Joe didn't have a problem with the fact that he molested me. That's why he did it, right? I'm the one that had a problem. And it was very appropriate that I had a problem. I'm glad that that wasn't a non-issue, right? Right? But still, I am left with me and the residue of what hurts me and what causes problems and distress. And it all sits on a foundation of where am I at in terms of love, of self and others, and forgiveness of self and others. You know? So that's been my journey with love and forgiveness in terms of those steps in the book. So now I think what we're going to do for our last... how much time do we go until? Okay, and we go until 3:30. Okay, so we can do a couple of different things. We can expand on this a little bit more. I'm going to give you a couple different options, and we'll figure out in the room how we want to do this. We can see if anybody in the room has an issue that they're struggling with in terms of forgiveness, right? We can talk about that. Have the person come up here and chat about it. They'd use a mic, and I can walk them through the process, right, that worked for me. And again, just reminding you, and this is very clear, I'm not a healthcare professional, right? Not a doctor, not a therapist, right? Just a loving member who would love to be of service. So we can do that. That's option one. Option two, we can sit down and look at some things in the book, look at very specific wording we have in the book around those steps, just to kind of get some stuff planted and see where it gets clarified in the book. Or we can open it up for questions, right? If people want to throw some questions out, and I'm happy to give you my 2 cents about it, sharing my experience, strength, and hope, and the experience of lots of people I've sponsored, because I sponsor chronic slippers exclusively. So I sponsor people who have a lot of pain and have a lot of anger and a lot of stuff that they've struggled to forgive. Lots of it. But so those are our three options, right? So we can do question and answer, we can look at more material in the book, or we can see if somebody wants to come up here and kind of workshop a problem. So do we have a sense? Does anybody raise your hand if you're thinking about workshopping and you just kind of keep, we're not going to count exactly. Let's just get a sense. If you want a workshop, if anybody wants a workshop, okay, that's not going over too well. Very good. Right. Well, workshop would be if I brought somebody up here, for instance, who's not forgiven somebody. So here's the issues. I call them the three M's. These are the things that tend to trip up people who are chronic slippers, right? Because chronic slipping is not about the food. Not about the food. It's about love and forgiveness. Chronic slipping is about love and forgiveness and not taking a third step, but you're not doing that because your heart's closed and you're struggling with love and forgiveness. So it's the three M's that give people trouble. Molestation, mothers, and money. Those are the things. Those are the big things. Dads would be a fourth, but it's mothers, molestation, and money. Those are the things that people struggle with. So it would be involve bringing somebody up here, and I'll be honest, this might be a little tricky because we don't have a lot of time. I do have some moderate concern about somebody getting up here and potentially opening their heart, and we got to close a workshop in 25 minutes. So I'm starting to think, I'm not sure how good that option is. That works better when I have more time. And I do more time, and we do this. I do this all the time. And it's interesting what has happened, the kind of stuff that I've heard, and the transformation that somebody can have when somebody is lovingly walking them through this process, and the idea that somebody's courageous enough to do it in front of big groups of people. I'm not sure we can kind of pull that off in 25 minutes. I'm a little concerned about that. So that was the workshopping thing. But are you okay if we kind of put that one to the side?
Yeah.
Okay, so our other thing is we can sit down and, you know, look at some of the wording in the book around steps 4, 8, and 9, or we can have people come up and ask questions. I can give you my 2 cents if somebody else wants to volunteer something in the room. Just need to make sure you've signed off on the sheet, or you know, we can do that. So we've got those two options. So let's look at those two. Do we want to do a more examination in the book, or do we want to do questions? Let's do questions. All right, very good. Okay, so you know how this works then. You need to be signed off on the form. So come up, and I guess we got a live mic here. Right, Joe? Okay, great. So we got a mic there. And
what is the purpose of a waiver? I'm just curious.
I don't know, and let's not get into that and have that dealt with on a recording.
Oh, you're recording.
Yeah. So questions, come on up, and if you want to do questions, then come on up. There's your mic. Great. I feel like I need to give a visual for people who are listening. So we have a beautiful woman who's come up here. She's dressed in a colorful thing, has a really pretty, pretty black shawl around. It's lovely. I'm intrigued.
And abstinent since July 8th and hoping I don't slip again. I'm Mayer Hill, and I am compulsive eater.
Great.
And, oh, wow, that was hot, everything you said. Thank you so much. Just a simple thing for me is because I have been doing the chronic slipping, I just would like to know, because I have done a whole lot of inventory in my lifetime, and I'm not pinpointing the feeling or the resentment or not forgiveness. I'm not pinpointing what's making me eat. So that's my comment, question, whatever.
Thank you again.
It was really, really stimulating what you said. Thank you so much.
Terrific. Good. I'm glad it was helpful. Here's what I would say to you, and I get calls like this all the time, and so the first thing I always say to people is, what does your sponsor say? Right? Because the most valuable thing is what the person who's in your life, who spends time with you and listens to you, that's much more valuable than kind of hearing somebody else, you know, somebody else's opinion or not an opinion. I don't espouse opinions. It's pretty solid stuff. So I'll share with you what I would share with you if you'd call me. But that would be the first thing. Just so you know, that would be the first thing I would say to anybody. What does your sponsor say? Because check in with the person who knows you, because it's patterns. Causes and conditions are dealing with patterns. So what I would say to you is, great, if you think it's not about that, that's terrific. You're not taking a third step. You're not done with the food, right? It's if somebody's not done, they're not done. And there's some feeling you don't want to feel. I don't know what that is. What I always tell people, I can't get anybody abstinent. If I did, my mother and my brother wouldn't be dead. They died of diabetes. And I had 2 other people in my family, an uncle and a cousin. My cousin killed himself, but my uncle died behind another addiction, right? So addiction runs rampant in my family. So I can't, I believe the A, B, and C we read at the end of How It Works, right? We were alcoholic or compulsive eaters and could not manage our own life, that probably no human power could have relieved our compulsion. C, that God could and would if he were sought, right? So I can't solve anybody's problem, but I'm really good at helping people figure out the lie. That I'm pretty good at. And somewhere there's a lie. Somewhere you're lying to yourself about something, right? And I don't know what that is. You know, take my phone number. Let's get on an outreach call and see if we can play around with it. But I'd check in with your sponsor, see what's going on, because at the end of the day, right, just like when we started on that paragraph at the top of page 63, when you want to eat, you're eating. And I just want to tell you, this is the most courageous question. It's very courageous of you to get up in the room and say, you know, look, I'm struggling with this. So bless your heart. Thank you. And I've been right there with you, so I get it. But somewhere, when you want to eat, you eat. That's the selfishness of addiction. But I want it, right? But somewhere there's something, my friend, that you don't want to feel and you don't want to deal with. All right, another question. Come on up.
Hi, I'm Bonnie. I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi, Bonnie. Hi.
Thank you so much. My question is, in my experience of sponsoring, when somebody starts talking about the fact that they were molested, sexually molested, I'm like, I don't know how to handle this. And I feel like they need a professional help. They need professional help. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I've suggested that in addition to, you know, working the steps. But I really respect what you've outlined here. You know, I mean, I agree with what you've outlined. I just feel like I wouldn't be able to do what your sponsor did with you. I just don't feel equipped. And I guess I'm just sort of saying this. It's sort of a question, but it's like, I need to get more knowledgeable about this sort of inventory as opposed to the how inventory so that I would feel comfortable taking somebody through it with that issue in particular.
Sure, yeah. Sure. No, I get it. And listen, we're really on the vanguard kind of talking about this. We really are. The statistic I heard that I'm looking for the citation on it is that 30% of people dealing with an eating disorder have been molested. That's 3 out of 10. That's a pretty big number. And this is just starting to crack open in the live meetings that I go to in Los Angeles. I'm hearing this conversation come up a whole lot. And I've been talking about this for years, but I'm starting to hear it come up now in shares. People are starting to let it out. So, Bonnie, I can really appreciate if you don't feel comfortable. The cool thing is we learn certain things here. What are a bunch of things we learn? Gosh, Mary, I'm so sorry that happened to you. I'm very conscious of the fact that I don't have any experience with this. So I'm with you. Sure, I always suggest professional help. The only reason that didn't solve my problem, I'd been in therapy for years. I'd been with good therapists, right? Good therapists, some of them. I mean, one brilliant therapist. I couldn't forgive. That wasn't the issue. Why? Because it kept me in the story. Therapy keeps me in the story. Now, a wonderful thing that it does, and I'm a big believer in therapy, and Bill is too. It's referenced in the book. Don't be afraid to seek outside help. Right? Silkworth was a big buddy of his, right? And as he went on, you know, Carl Jung. I mean, we had big fans, big doctors who were big fans from the beginning. So, yes, I fully believe in it, absolutely. And the wonderful thing that can happen there is it can start getting me feeling comfortable with feeling the feelings, right? And that's a powerful thing because I'm going to feel the feelings if I put the food down and these memories start coming up. So, yes, very, very valuable. But if you don't have the experience, tell the person. Right? Refer them to somebody else if you want to. If you don't want to sponsor somebody who's been dealing with this, that wouldn't ever be my preference. I hope that kind of thing doesn't start happening in program. There's already a lot of kind of that stratifying that goes on in terms of, can I sponsor somebody with a medical abstinence if I, you know, don't, you know, I mean, for me, I'm just all about, let's make this work and just be honest. And it's not, If I ever have an issue with anybody and anything that's going on in their life, it's not about them in any way. It's about me and my inability to feel. Let me tell you something. The first time I sat down with a sponsee who'd molested, that was interesting. And then my next sponsee after that, because I sponsor men and women, because we, you know, really
you know, we don't have as many men here. So there was a long time where there weren't a lot of male sponsors. So he had to sponsor men. And the first time I sat down with a man, and he'd been he was kind of a serial molester. And when I listened to his fifth step, because obviously the only person I could share that with was my sponsor. My sponsor said, "Wow, are you okay? How did that go?" And I said, "It was fine." We did it over the course of 3 days, you know, a couple hours each day. So it was like 6 hours. And every time we finished, I could not wait to hug him and just love him and see him with the eyes of love. That's transformation, right? That's transformation. That's what I came here for. Being a size six is the least interesting transformation I've ever experienced here. It is so uninteresting. I got to go to my 30th high school reunion, right? And I was the fat girl in high school, and people said mean stuff, and guys, you know, called me out at basketball games, and, you know, I had a bleacher full of people laughing because somebody had to talk about how fat I was and whatever, right? And I've shown up at the reunion 30 years later where, you know, whatever. The outside stuff is never telling the real story, but you know what? Still, I look pretty good these days. And he was fat, and I knew it because I saw him on Facebook before I even got to the reunion. And I couldn't wait to sit down with him and look at pictures of his wife and his children and love and be kind and joyful and forgiving. That's what I came here for, right? And sitting down and listening to a fist step like that, that's what I came for. That's the transformation, as within, so without. You work the steps and you get transformed. It can't help but show up on your body, right? So that's what I would tell you, Bonnie. I'm with you, right? Seek out professional help if you don't feel comfortable because you don't have the experience. But I would never let a sponsee go. I'd be holding onto their hand and I'd be walking them up to another sponsor. I'd personally, and that just wouldn't happen to me. There's nothing that anybody could say to me that it would be an issue for me to sponsor them. But if it did, I would hold somebody by the hand, and I'd be holding on to them while they were getting in another boat, right? Because if you're in my boat, you're in a red boat. But if you want out of my boat, unless you want to jump back in the water, good luck with that. There's sharks out there, but okay. But if you don't want to work with me anymore, I'm going to row you up alongside another boat and be holding your hand while you're getting in the other boat, especially if somebody's revealed something like that. So, yep. And somebody had a comment you'd signed and wanted to hang on. Hang on, she had already gone ahead of you.
Yeah. My name's Sable. I have been to thousands of meetings and never, and I'm a big book person, three Joe and Charlie workshops, big, big, big book person, never heard about forgiveness in the term of connected
to. Baby, you got to keep speaking in the mic or we're not going to get you.
Let's put it back here. Let me stay. Okay, I never heard forgiveness with resentment, ever. You know, and I was taught for me that there's a big difference between anger and resentment, and that resentment meant to refeel the anger. And if I can, I know it's not a 10-step meeting, but we do 4, 8, and 9 in the 10-step. If I can catch the anger right away, it doesn't have to become a resentment. And there was something I wanted to read because I was thinking about it when you were talking. And what helps me to, I guess, to give forgiveness without ever hearing that word. It probably was said, but I didn't hear it. And it's on the bottom of 66 in the big book. This was our course. We realized that people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. And would I treat a person like that? And I asked God to help me to be of service. And that gets me outside of me. That was probably the most profound thing that happened in my early recovery, to know that. And thank you for talking to me about that forgiveness.
Get my number. Let's chat. You and I can chat and help each other more. All right, my friend. And you were coming up next? Great.
My name's Lorraine. Thank you very much. I come to these conventions about once every 3 years. I've been coming to meetings for about 50. I don't have it. I do that first step, rate the question. I tell the story over and over again. I don't go to therapy anymore. I don't need to tell the story. I get the same answers. So, and I've got the resentment. The same one. It's about money from 50 years ago. And I keep eating. So obviously I don't want to feel feelings. And I keep saying, well, I'm going to lose weight and I'm going to look good and I'm going to show you. I know it's not about the weight, but I can't help letting go of that. I can't let go of that feeling. You know, I'm going to show you Well, it's 50 years later, and here I am, still. The good part is, I'm here. But I say that every 3 years, you know? And I'm patted on the back. Oh, good, you're here. And I'm dying. It's too bad.
No, you and I will, let's make sure we exchange numbers. And, I'm so struck. What is your name, Lorraine?
Lorraine.
That is such a beautiful share. I'm just so struck by how beautiful that was, Lorraine. And you and I are going to be in contact. But, good Lord, look how I make that declaration. We're going to be in contact, if you would like, Lorraine. I would love to be in contact with you. Good Lord. But that was very courageous. Let me tell you something. If you ever hear a share like that in the meeting, make a beeline to that person after the meeting, right? And, and in how we have the, you know, the 7 days. So unless Lorraine had 7 days, we wouldn't hear that share. But thankfully, we have after meetings, and there are things that happen, particularly those things happen on the bridge. I don't know that, you know, I haven't experienced that kind of spreading yet to our live meetings, but, you know, it's so wonderful how we do those meetings after the meeting, right, on the bridge. And if you hear something like that from somebody, get the phone number and call them. That is more important for your recovery than anything else you are ever going to do. And I remember on a circuit speaker tape hearing a guy share that he heard somebody come in a meeting and very, very dramatically and desperately just saying she felt like she was at the end of her rope, right? I mean, she sobbed, the wailing and gnashing of teeth, felt like she was at the end of her rope and couldn't go on much longer. And after she finished, another old timer with lots and lots of years of time said, "Well, honey, you just hang in there." And he interrupted her. She proceeded to share. And when she finished, he jumped in and he was furious. And he just said, "Hang in there." And he turned to the, you know, the person. I mean, crosstalk, right, went out the window, which is great. In an instance like that, it probably should. But he just said, "I'm going to talk with you after the meeting." And he took her, you know, to eat. This guy took this woman to dinner and, you know, talked it out, helped her find a sponsor, et cetera, et cetera. But when you hear somebody get very vulnerable and reveal something like that, go help them. Go help them. That's what we do here. That's the whole thing. That's the whole thing. That's why I got so clear about this, Lorraine, and said, "I would love to be in your life. I would love to help you. I can't solve your problem. I don't have that power. But we might be able to love you up to a solution. And would love to support you. And thank you for so courageously coming up." Anybody else?
You have to sign.
Did you? Yeah, my name is Tazwell, and I'm definitely a grateful compulsive addict.
What a great name. That's a great name.
Thank you. I want to tell you what a gift it was to listen to you. And in so many ways, it touched me. And also opened up my ears. So my question is, I'm relatively new to this program, although I've known about it for about 26 years. You know, I started 26 years ago, and in 60 days, I was gone. But I've been around the other one for 30 years, and I've been a slipper in there, because this is my issue. But when it comes to the resentment, the love, the forgiveness, my question is that, you know, with all the knowledge that we gain through these the meetings and the book and the appropriate way to do things, I dwindle with the good and the evil in my mind or on my shoulders, and I process these resentments. My question is at this point in my abstinence, which is so new, I'm confused with, what am I, the hole in the donut? I certainly am not God. You know, I'm certainly just another person, and I'm so conflicted with my old train of thought and my new train of thought, and I get resentful at myself, which isolates me from other people because I don't want to create new resentments. And that's where I'm at right now with that. So I hope that was a question, because you have pretty good answers.
And I'm sorry, I don't know that I did hear the question.
Yeah. All right, so my question is, how do you deal with, as you know, you start in this program, there's a lot of changes that go on. And with the information of the resentment, the yeah. cause, but the story, what got me, but the cause, how it affected me, and what's my part? Well, I'm in obviously in all parts of my resentment, but they still keep popping up and feed like this adrenaline part.
Right.
And
so your question is what?
I
is your question? It sounds like what you've said, Taz, is that it's kind of like how does one maneuver when you've had this old way of being and now you're being encouraged into this new way of being? How does one kind of deal with that?
Yeah.
Almost schizophrenic?
Yes.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Okay. Very good. All right. Very good. That is so good. No, I so can appreciate it. I really understand. And I think we just do what we are doing, right? That's what meetings are about. That's what the outreach calls are about. We are so lucky in our program that we don't debate whether we're going to make outreach calls. We are so, so lucky. So for me, Taz, it would probably be involved making an outreach call. And again, that's what I love about the 10th step as it's outlined in the book. Right? Because it says, when you've got a 10-step as it's outlined in the big book is not the thing you do at night. What you do at night is the same thing you do in the morning. It's an 11th step, according to the big book. And again, it doesn't matter because it changed in the 12 and 12. It doesn't matter what you call it. But what they talk about in terms of a 10-step is when you get derailed, there are four steps you take. It's on page 84. When you get derailed, there are four steps you take. And the way I remember it is God makes apples sweet, GMAC, right? Or if you have a GM truck, that'll help you. You know, that's probably who you're paying your bill to, right? GMAC, God makes apples, sweet. God makes apples sweet, GMAS. First step is ask God to remove it, right? So if I'm derailed, if I get angry, because all of a sudden, Taz, I'm caught up in this, like, gosh, I'm back in the old behavior, despite the fact I've got this great abstinence and things are great, and now I know how to live my life, and uh-oh, I've gotten angry, and I've, shot my mouth off at somebody. So you ask somebody to, you ask God to remove it. So that's the first step. God makes, M, you share it with another man or a woman. That's the second step. The third step is God makes apples, A, you make amends if necessary. So if I shot my mouth off to somebody and, quite obviously I owe that person an amends, right? And then sweet, God makes apples sweet. And then you get into service. Those are the four steps. Those are on page 84. That helps me a lot with this kind of thing because this comes up for me a lot. It really does. Like I said, can you imagine I'm driving to the hotel to lead a workshop on a beautiful day. It's rainy. I love rain, so I'm in my wheelhouse. The only thing that would make it better is if it was torrentially raining and it was about 15 degrees colder. That would be ideal for me, right? But this is a good day for me, and all of a sudden somebody turns in front of me, catches me off guard a little bit, and I'm derailed again. So I love that this process gets internalized for me. And what I would just say to you is just stay here, keep doing this over and over again, and all of a sudden it gets internalized. It really, really does, this whole forgiveness thing. I'll tell you a quick story. I got married, and somebody who worked for me that I invited to my wedding and was going to be watching our home while we were on a honeymoon embezzled and burgled our home. Not embezzled, wrong term. Burgled our home. But she had actually been stealing from me for the 3 months before my wedding. She was a declutterer, right? She was somebody who had been in my life for a long time. And I was just getting my home together because I had family coming in from out of town. So she'd been stealing from me for the 3 months before my wedding, and then she burgled me while we were on our honeymoon. And when she got caught, right, all I could think as I was driving to the sting that the police set up, right, all I could think as I was driving there is I love her and forgive her, right? I couldn't wait to hug her and tell her I loved her and I forgive her. Can't have her in my home anymore. I couldn't give her name and number to the 6 people who wanted to hire her from my wedding, including one of my close friends who's a judge, right? Couldn't refer her, right? Probably don't use me as a referral anymore. But I loved her and forgave her. That's amazing, right? That's what I came for. And I'm not trying to impress you. I'm trying to impress upon you what happens when you do this over and over and over again. So yes, will you still have those moments? Perhaps. I know I do. That's what a tent step is for. That's what the outreach calls are for. That's what meetings are for, right? But that's the whole thing, is just so that I get turned inside out. And I just, for me, the other thing, Tess, I let it be okay that I still have a shadow self. I let that be okay. I love her, right? I do. I just let it be okay. Because I'll tell you what, if being mean to me was going to solve my problem, my dad would have solved my weight problem in my childhood. So that's not it. That's not the solution. So just love, lots of love and lots of acceptance and lots of what you just did exactly, getting up and sharing it and saying it out loud so that everybody can nod in the room and you can look around and see everybody. You didn't see him because you were talking this way, but so you can see everybody nodding their head. We get it. You're not alone. We're right there with you. So I think that's probably, so we got 4 minutes. So if we got a quick question, so, you know, come up and, you know, ask me about to solve the God question or something, so it'll be something quick. Something quick and easy, right? Yeah, right. Anything quick? Come on.
I live with a niece who I don't get along with. Not even saying hello in the morning often. Interference in the kitchen where we're both in the same space. People have said she treats me very rudely. And I treated her very rudely for years also, so I certainly have a part of it. I know that, too. And I've written about this many times and shared with my sponsor.
This is already getting too long. So you don't forgive the niece?
I have not forgiven my niece, correct. Okay. So I'm like,
what does your sponsor say about this? What has your sponsor said?
I have a new sponsor. I have a new sponsor, so yeah. So my old sponsor used to say to love her and to pray for her. She used to often say pray for her. So.
Well, I like that. Why did we get rid of that sponsor? Anyway,
yeah.
Look, I'm just being cheeky. So I'm just going to sit. Because you and I are buddies.
We know each other, yeah. Can I sit down or do
Please
I want me to stand?
Sit down, okay, and good. I'm just going to give you my 2 cents, which is probably about what it's worth. But you and I are friends, so she knows I'm pulling her leg and stuff. But I would. Now, if somebody called me, right, and I'd laugh and joke, and I'd say, oh, my gosh, and, you know, I get it. And I always do that, right? I always take somebody's hand when they're saying, I'm struggling with this. I say, I am too. And I give an example where I'm struggling with something to forgive someone, right? So that nobody's ever speaking from a spiritual hilltop here, because that doesn't solve the problem. And we know I don't belong on a hilltop because I got mad at somebody turning in front of me, right? So I would say, Alisa, I really understand this. There's a struggle I've had. Here's something I've found that has worked well for me, right? I keep putting it down on a four-step. I do the rudimentary behavioral tasks that I'm asked to do. I try to not, and I don't know why you switch sponsors, and it could have nothing to do with this, and probably does, but I try to not do a lot of the sponsor jumping, because that is just an attempt for me to not look at myself. So I would love to chat with you about this. You know, call me and let's chat. We can figure this out really quickly. It doesn't take a long time. It really doesn't. What it's going to involve is whether or not somebody is ready to look at their part and feel the feelings, right? That's all it is. That's all it is. The reason it didn't even figure in, but I could not judge that woman who stole from me. Stealing was a big part of my story. I had a lot of amends to make, financial amends to make, because I'd stolen people's food and stuff. I'd done shoplifting. I worked at a fast food restaurant and stole stuff, food and game tickets and things. It's just a miracle I didn't win their game where you can win $1 million. So how do you pay that back 10 years later? I guess a buck by buck, I guess. But you know what I'm saying? I was in no position to judge. And because I was willing to see that and look at that, and I didn't even have to think of it. This stuff is in my DNA now. But we can absolutely sort this out.
Just
and call me.
Just to clarify, my sponsor slipped. That's the reason.
I gotcha. I know you don't. Again, but yeah, don't anybody get scared. Lisa and I are buddies, so she knew I was going to kind of jerk her chain a little bit. Anyway, so that's it. We have other great workshops, and this one is complete. Let's close with the Serenity Prayer, shall we?
Thank you.
Okay. So take somebody's hand. Why don't you stand up? You're going to have to get out of the room anyway, unless you're going to stay for the next workshop. Maybe you want to stretch those legs. Just take somebody's hand. And just taking a moment of silence for the compulsive eater, bulimic, or anorexic who's suffering in this room or out there, and we know they're out there, and they might be in here. God.
Grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
I will not mind be done. Keep coming back. It's working.